Even so, after a few hours, she was bored. Arielle was hiding. She hadn't come to Grace's wrist mirror since the playhouse, and Grace's hand was hurting from coloring so many pictures. She was about to whine, again, when the door to Nana's room burst open. Dad rushed in, carrying a huge stack of books under one arm. "How is she?" he asked Papa. "I'm fine," Nana said. She smiled, but it looked sort of flat, like she was tired. "You two don't need to go into doc speak. I had a panic attack that felt a hell of a lot like a heart attack. They're discharging me now. It's embarrassing, really." Dad put his books down on the chair beside Grace. Ruffling her hair, he moved past her and went to the bedside.
"Panic attack? You haven't had one of those in years. Not since..."
Nana held up a shaking hand. "We all know the history."
"She thought she saw Lexi," Papa said.
Daddy drew in a sharp breath. This was news. Nana had a reason, and the reason had a name. Grace scrambled up the metal bed rails again and hung on.
"Who's Lexi?"
No one answered her. They just looked at each other.
"A delusion?"
Daddy asked quietly.
"Your dad thinks so," Nana said.
"Hopefully."
"She's made her feelings pretty clear,"
Daddy said.
"Lexi, I mean. She's probably in Florida with Eva."
Grace reached over and put her hand in his back pocket. It made her feel connected to him, even if he hardly noticed.
"Who's Lexi?"
she asked again.
"Mildred's niece is back from school," Daddy said. "She has dark brown hair."
"I'm sure that's who it was," Nana said. Grace bounced a little on the bed rail. The metal clanged. It bugged her that no one was paying attention to her.
"I saw a baby with four arms," she said. "He's in the nursery."
"Why don't you take Gracie home, Zach?" Nana said. "She's been really good." Grace slithered down from her perch and went to the desk, where she gathered up all her pictures and crayons. Taking one drawing of a butterfly on a flower, she handed it to her Nana.
"This is for you."
Nana stared at the picture.
"Thanks, Gracie. I feel better already."
"They're magic crayons. They make anyone better. That's why the hospital has 'em," Grace said earnestly. "The yellow ones can fly."
"Come on, Grace,"
Dad said. He gathered all their things together and took her out to the car. She climbed into the car seat in the back, and he strapped her in. All the way home, Grace talked to her daddy. She'd been quiet for hours, and she had so much to say. She told him about the new game Arielle had taught her, and the sand dollar she'd found by the playhouse, and about the new friend she'd made today, and the seagull that had landed right in front of her.
"Look, Daddy,"
Grace said, sitting up straighter as they drove through town.
"There she is! There's my new friend! Hi!"
Grace yelled at the closed window, waving furiously.
"Did you see her, Daddy? That's a cool bike she has. It's magic. I think she's a movie star. She said she ate an ostrich once."
Daddy kept driving. A few minutes later, he turned into their driveway and parked.
"You believe me about the ostrich lady, don't you? She says she..."
"Enough, Gracie. No pretending tonight, okay? Daddy's had a tough day."
"I wasn't pretending,"
Grace said, stung by the accusation. She dragged her blankie off the seat beside her and wrapped it around her neck. Her daddy was in one of those moods where he wasn't listening to her. Even when he looked at her, she got the feeling he wasn't paying attention, like he was seeing someone else in his head. And he looked sad. Grace had grown up around sad. She knew it was best to stay quiet and cuddle when he was like this. But she'd been quiet all day, and she was desperate to talk to someone, to him. In the house, Grace went right to the fridge and pulled out the heavy casserole Nana had made. She worked really hard not to drop it.
This goes in the oven, Daddy,
she said, holding it out proudly. He took it from her and put it in the oven.
I'm going to go take a shower. I'll put a DVD in for you.
She started to say she didn't want to watch a movie, but he was already turning away, going into the living room. She climbed up onto the sofa with her blankie and sucked her thumb. No one was paying any attention to her anyway. It seemed like Daddy took the longest shower in the world, and when he was done, and walking around in his baggy sweatpants, with his wet hair dripping onto the red USC t-shirt, she followed him around, talking about anything she could think of.
On the way to the hospital, I got to sit in the front of Papa's car. We followed the ambulance, and he let me drive, just onto the ferry. I went really slow. I'm a good driver. I saw a killer whale eat a seal. It was gross.
Nothing made him pay attention. He hardly even looked at her, and his face just got sadder and sadder, so much that Grace started to feel sad herself. Lonely. By the time he put her into her jammies and tucked her into bed, she felt like crying. Dad curled up alongside her.
I'm sorry if I've been weird tonight, Princess. Being in the hospital reminded me of my sister.
Mia,
she said solemnly, showing off that she remembered the name they hardly ever said aloud.
I bet you hate hospitals.
I wouldn't be much of a doctor if that were true.
He smiled down at her.
Besides, I got you in a hospital.
Grace snuggled against him. This was one of her favorite stories.
What did I look like?
You were a perfect little princess. Your eyes were a sort of brownish blue then. You hardly even cried.
And my mommy was there?
She named you Grace.
And you named me after your sister. Then you took me home.
I loved you from the very first second.
I know. But how come...
Enough, Gracie,
he said, reaching over for the book on the nightstand.
Daddy's had a hard day. How about if I read more of The Secret Garden to you?
But don't you want to hear about my new friend?
The movie star who ate an ostrich and rides a magic bike?
She might not really be a movie star. Maybe she's a spy who...
Enough, Gracie, he said, opening the book. Now, where were we?
He knew, though. He always knew. Grace smiled sleepily and murmured,
Colin is better.
Oh, yeah,
Daddy said, turning to the right page and starting to read.
One of the strange things about living in the world is that it is only now and then one is quite sure one is going to live forever and ever.
Grace popped her thumb into her mouth and listened to the music of her daddy's voice.
They yell at her, Scott, and she's always alone. No one bothers to come out and play with her. Her only friend seems to be invisible.
My son has an imaginary friend. It's a duck. What does that say about him, I wonder?
This is serious, Lexi said.
She had spent the last 24 hours wrestling with her own emotions, and no matter how often or how forcefully she told herself that Grace was better off without an ex-con for a mother, she couldn't trample the new feeling that she'd been wrong to abandon her daughter. It was like opening the door on a tornado. There was no stopping the damage that would be done inside, and no closing the door again. Abandon. The word ate through Lexi's beset intentions and stripped her bare. In all her attempts to be unlike her own mother, had she done the same thing? And how was it that she'd never asked herself this question before?
You're right, Scott said, pushing back his chair. The metal wheels screeched on the pergo flooring. It's very serious. Why don't you sit down? You're moving like an egg beater.
She did as he asked and sat down.
Talk to me, Lexi.
She took a deep breath. Giving Grace up was the hardest thing I've ever done. Her voice dropped. It was difficult to say the words, even after all her therapy.
The only thing that kept me going was this image of what her life would be like. I saw pink dresses and birthday parties with ponies and bedtime stories and family Christmas dinners. I saw a little girl who grew up knowing she was loved, knowing where she belonged.
She looked up.
I trusted them, Scott,
she said, anger surging up.
All of them. Miles, Jude, Zach. I trusted them to give her the childhood I never had. And you know what I found? A lonely little girl whose daddy is too busy to be with her. A girl who gets yelled at for nothing. Who plays all alone on a Saturday morning. A girl with no friends.
What do you want to do?
She got up again and began pacing. I'm a felon, an ex-con. I'm 24 years old with almost no job experience. Gee, I worked in the prison library and an ice cream shop, and I picked raspberries in the summer. I'm broke. What can I do?
Did your Aunt Eva have money when she took you in?
Lexi stopped moving suddenly and stared out of the office window. Outside, a young mother was helping her red-haired daughter up to a silver drinking fountain. She had a job and a place to live.
You have a college degree and you're a hard worker. On top of that, you're one of the most honorable people I know. You know more about love and its lack than most people. So I'll ask you again, what do you want to do? It's a simple question. Either you stay or you go.
And if I choose to stay?
We would petition the court to modify the parenting plan. We'd seek joint custody, or, failing that, visitation rights.
Supervised, I suppose, me being an ex-con.
You aren't a violent offender, Lexi, he said. You aren't your mother. But, yes, they might impose supervision at the start. I didn't say it would be easy, but you will get visitation rights at least, and you'll quite possibly get joint custody. We wouldn't get full custody, but you're her mother, Lexi. The court knows how important you are to her. And you're welcome to stay at my office until you find someplace else.
You're her mother. For years, even before Gracie was born, Lexi barred that thought from her consciousness. The words were simply too painful to consider. But now, hearing them spoken aloud, she heard their sweetness, and longing swelled inside of her. She could hold Gracie, hug her, and kiss her, and take her to the park.
It won't be easy,
Scott said into the building silence. I imagine the Faradays will fight you. It was too late to worry about that now. She'd loosened the idea of motherhood, and it had uprooted her, swept her skyward.
Let's file the papers, Lexi said.
You're sure?
She finally turned to face him.
I'm sure.
Jude gave up trying to sleep at about 4 o'clock. She left the warmth of her bedroom and made her way into the dark living room. There, standing in front of the tall, black windows, she stared at her own tarnished reflection. She knew what the doctors wanted her to believe, that panic had caused her delusion rather than the other way around. Hell, she wanted to believe it too. But she didn't believe it, and that was that. Sometime during the night, she'd become convinced. So much so that when Miles shuffled through the great room in search of coffee, she said, I saw her. Lexi.
I saw her.
Miles looked confused.
Wait.
Walking past her, he went into the kitchen and came out with a cup of coffee.
None for you. You look ready to blast off as it is. Now, say it again.
I saw her. I wasn't mistaken.
She tapped her foot nervously, stared up at him.
I always wanted to keep track of her.
She nodded curtly,
I know. I didn't. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, that's how it works.
He stood there, naked except for his blue boxers, staring out at the sunrise.
Okay, he finally said, and handed her his coffee. Let's find out.
He went to his laptop, pulled up a phone number, and then made a call.
Hey, Bill, sorry to call so early, but we have a situation here. Can you find out when Alexa Bale was released? Yes, I'm aware we asked not to know. Something has changed.
Yes. December 15, 2009, if I remember correctly.
Thank you. I'll be right here.
He hung up and took his coffee back.
Are you okay?
He asked, gently, touching her hair.
I've been better.
They stood there together, staring out at the backyard, saying nothing. Time passed like the beats of their heart, quiet and steady. The phone startled Jude so much she let out a little scream. Miles answered.
Hello?
Jude tapped her foot again and crossed her arms, digging her fingernails into her own arms so tightly she almost drew blood.
Really?
Miles said, frowning.
Why is that?
Oh. Okay, thanks. Again, sorry to bother you.
He hung up. Well? Jude said, wishing she'd downed a Xanax.
She was released on Thursday. Time was added onto her sentence for bad behavior.
Jude's foot tapped so fast she was practically dancing. She came straight here.
You don't know that.
We have to do something. Get an injunction or something. Maybe we should move.
We are not going to move.
Miles took her by the shoulders and made her look at him.
Calm down, Jude.
Are you insane?
Jude felt hysterical laughter bubbling up inside of her. She knew it was inappropriate to laugh now, but her emotions were all cross-wired these days. Sometimes she cried when she was happy, and laughed when she was scared, and screamed when she was tired. She pulled free of Miles and ran to her bedroom, where she found her Xanax, and fumbled to open the bottle.
Damn childproof caps.
Miles took it from her and opened it, handing her a pill, which she downed with his hot coffee.
You better get me an appointment with Dr. Bloom.
She survived the next 2 hours in a medicated haze. She washed and dried her hair and dressed in a pale beige summer weight sheath. It wasn't until she was in Dr. Bloom's chair, squirming under the psychiatrist's sharp gaze, that she realized she was still in her slippers.
Thank you for making time for me, Jude said,
trying to hide her slippered feet.
A panic attack? You haven't had one in more than 18 months. What happened?
She couldn't meet Harriet's penetrating gaze. It made her feel weak and delusional, so she glanced to her left.
I was at Zach's house on Saturday morning, making breakfast for everyone. Zach is studying for finals.
And?
I saw Gracie outside, talking to Lexi.
Lexi is the girl who was driving the car that night.
Yes.
We haven't talked much about her. In fact, I believe you said you'd never come back if I mentioned her again.
Out of sight, out of mind, Jude answered by rote, tapping her foot again.
So you saw her again after all these years, and you had a panic attack.
She was talking to Gracie.
Her daughter, Dr. Bloom said.
Jude snapped to her feet and started pacing. She was having trouble breathing. She gave up that right when she went to prison. She signed documents.
Is that when you think she gave up the right to be a mother? When she went to prison? Or when she killed your daughter?
Both, Jude said, breathing hard now. Her chest hurt. What's the difference? She can't waltz back in and act as if it never happened. Zach finally has his life back on track. I won't let him see her again.
Sit down, Jude, Dr. Bloom said in a reasonable voice.
What if she wants...
What if... Oh, God.
Jude drew in a great gulping breath and started to panic. Dr. Bloom was beside her almost instantly, touching her back, rubbing it in a soothing way.
You're all right, Jude. Just breathe. Here, sit down.
Jude got her breathing under control, and the pain in her chest receded. With a shaking hand, she pushed the sweat-dampened hair out of her face and tried to smile.
I'm falling apart. Would that really be so terrible?
Jude wrenched away from the doctor.
Are you sure you went to med school?
Jude, you can't control this situation.
Thanks for that, Pearl.
She looked longingly at the door. This wasn't helping.
I should have swallowed a handful of pills when...
She couldn't say the words out loud. She'd never been able to.
You thought about it, Dr. Bloom reminded her. But even in the darkest times, you had hope.
You think hope is what stopped me?
What stopped you?
She was not going to answer that. She hated the answer anyway.
I'm worried about Zach, damn it. He's fragile, like me. He's never gotten over his guilt or his grief.
To see Lexi again.
And what if she wants to be Grace's mother? I won't let her be a part of our family again. Oh, God.
She's already a part of your family, Harriet said.
Shut up!
Excellent retort. By the way, you don't sound like a woman who feels nothing for her granddaughter.
Jude reached for her purse, snagged it.
I need to see a lawyer, not a shrink.
What makes you think you need a lawyer?
I need to protect Grace and Zach. Maybe we need a restraining order.
You think keeping Lexi away will protect them?
Of course. Have you even been listening to me?
Lexi is your granddaughter's mother, Dr. Bloom said gently. You tell me you used to put a lot of store in motherhood.
Jude reeled back.
I need to get out of here.
Without waiting for a response, she headed for the door. As she wrenched it open, she heard Dr. Bloom say,
She was 18 years old, Jude. Think about that.
Jude slammed the door behind her. Chapter 22 Jude called Miles and asked him to meet her at Zach's. Then she drove straight down to the ferry dock. Her timing was impeccable. They were loading the boat when she got there. The 30-minute sound crossing seemed to take forever. She tapped her fingers nervously on the steering wheel. She wasn't sure about anything except this. She had to get to Grace. All she wanted to do right now was gather her family together, as if her arms were the safe place they'd once been. What was left of her family, anyway? What Lexi had left of her family? Off the ferry, she drove through town slowly, her eyes peeled for a dark-haired girl in Bermuda shorts and a drugstore t-shirt. She thought she saw Lexi a dozen times, and she stomped on the brakes so often that horns honked behind her. She veered onto Turnigan Street and drove past the elementary school to the daycare. There she got out of the car and strode up to the pretty little A-frame house that was the Silly Bear daycare. Inside, she found an empty playroom full of brightly colored plastic tables and beanbag chairs. She went out to the backyard, where a dozen kids were playing on Lincoln Log-type swing sets, in sandboxes, and in a playhouse. She took it all in at once, and then began looking for Grace, whom she knew would be alone.
"Hi, Jude," said the daycare's owner, Lee Skitter. They had known each other for years. Lee's youngest son had played soccer with Zach. You're here early.
I don't see Grace, Jude said, realizing too late that she hadn't said hello and that her voice was sharp. Sorry, I'm kind of stressed out.
Lexi's here, Lee said. She sure looks different, doesn't she? Jude felt a chill go through her.
And you let her see Grace?
Lee seemed surprised by the question, or maybe it was Jude's raised voice. She said you'd agreed to it,
And there's no restraining order in place, is there? I mean, I know she doesn't have custody, but we all knew she'd come back someday. Why hadn't Jude thought of this scenario? Lee Skidder had known Zack and Lexi in their high school days. She'd said on several occasions how much she liked Lexi. No doubt she even felt a little sorry for her. So many people did. When Dateline did their segment on the show, plenty of people piped up to say that Lexi's punishment had been too harsh. Yeah, poor Lexi. Jude felt the start of panic. Why hadn't they gotten a restraining order against Lexi just in case? At the very least, she should have told Lee and the school that Lexi was not to be allowed near her daughter. Didn't full custody give them that right? Jude, is something wrong? Zack never asked me to keep Grace away from her mother. Jude pushed past Lee and ran across the sawdust-strewn backyard. At the childproof gate, she manipulated the latch and kept going, racing through the trees toward the beach. There, she shuddered to a halt. There were kids everywhere, laughing and playing. The daycare's other supervisor was over by the driftwood, watching the kids. Calm down, Judith. She scanned the shoreline. There she was, a little blonde girl alongside a dark-haired young woman. Lexi. Jude ran forward, almost falling in her sudden fury. She grabbed Lexi by the arm, spun her around. Lexi paled. Jude.
Hey, Nana, Grace said. This is my new friend.
Grace, go over to Tammy, Jude said tightly.
But...
Now, Jude yelled. Grace flinched at the harshness of the command. Her little shoulders hunched forward, and she shuffled away, her head hung low.
You have no right to be here, Jude said.
As Lexi looked up, Jude noticed several things at once. Lexi was hard-looking, almost stringy, but she was still very young. And when she noticed the girl's frizzy, curly, untamed hair, she thought of Mia saying,
She's like me, Madre. Is that Coolio or what?
Jude stumbled back at the memory. She shouldn't have come here, shouldn't have approached Lexi. She wasn't strong enough.
Go, Jude said weakly.
Please.
I needed to see her.
And you have.
Jude felt frail enough to drop to her knees. It took concentration just to keep standing.
She's lonely,
Lexi said, looking toward Grace, who stood apart from the other kids and stared back at them.
What do you expect? Jude said bitterly. She's grown up in a broken family.
I told myself I'd see that she was happy and I'd leave, but she's not happy.
Jude opened her purse, reached in for her wallet with shaking hands.
I'll pay you to go. How much? $20,000? $50,000? Just tell me how much you want.
Lexi's face changed at that, but Jude was shaking too hard to focus clearly. A dull thudding squeezed her chest, and she had the terrible thought that she might pass out.
$100,000? How about that?
I gave her to Zack, Lexi said. Gave her. Do you know how hard that was? Can you imagine?
Losing a child? Jude said.
Yes,
Lexi, I know how it feels.
I did it because I loved her, and because I trusted you and Zack and Miles to be her family.
Jude saw the censure in Lexi's eyes, and she knew it was warranted, and that only made it hurt more.
We are her family.
No. She's afraid of you. Did you know that? She says you never hold her or kiss her. She wonders why you don't love her.
Jude felt exposed suddenly. Fear bled up inside her, bubbled out until she was shaking so hard she dropped her purse.
How dare you?
But the words had no bite, no venom.
I trusted all of you.
Lexi's voice broke. It was the first evidence of real emotion, and Jude seized it.
Zack has given up everything for Grace. Everything.
You mean
USC, don't you? Your holy grail. You never cared that he was happy, just that he did what you wanted him to. That's not true. He loved me, but that meant nothing to you.
You killed his sister, Jude said.
Yes, Lexi said, her mouth trembling. And I have to live with that every day of my life. I did everything I could to make it up to you and Zack and Grace. But there is no making it up. I gave you my freedom and my daughter, and still you want more. Well, fuck you, Jude. You don't get any more. Grace is my daughter, my Mia, and I want her back. As Lexi walked away, Jude just stood there, eyes stinging, throat tight, hearing Lexi's voice say over and over again, "My Mia." Once Lexi started walking down the beach, she couldn't stop. She was going in the wrong direction. Her bike was parked in the public area at the end of the dead-end road, but she couldn't turn around. Couldn't watch Jude bundle Grace up and take her away, as if it were dangerous for Grace to know her own mother. A cool summer breeze plucked at her hair. Her eyes watered in the wind. Still, she put her hands in her pockets and kept walking. She turned and looked back down the beach. Jude was still there. Lexi wanted to be tough and hard, to feel that she was justified in coming here and wanting her daughter back. And she did feel it. Justified, for all the reasons she'd given Jude, mostly because the Faradays had had a chance to make Grace happy, and they'd failed. But Lexi's guilt and remorse, always floating inside of her, were rising now. She had destroyed the Faradays. In the beginning, she'd hoped that her years in prison would heal them somehow. But she knew better than anyone that time and distance didn't heal you. It had been naive to assume that Grace could be raised as Mia and Zack had, in the bosom of love and happiness. So in a way, it was Lexi's fault that her daughter was unhappy now. All of that was true, and all of it weighed heavily on Lexi. But there was something else now, a lightness that she hadn't felt in years. It was hope, a bright beam in the blackness of her guilt. She could lift Grace up. She could be the kind of mother she'd dreamed of having. Maybe they wouldn't have money or a big house or a new car, but Lexi knew better than most that love could be enough. Eva had proven that. She hated to hurt the Faradays and Zack, again, hated it to her marrow, but she'd paid enough for her mistake. The decision anchored her. Wiping her eyes, she looked around, surprised to see how far she'd walked. Behind her, the public beach was a gray comma of sand, tucked tightly against dark woods. She couldn't tell if people were still there or not. She started to turn back, when a flash of hot pink plastic caught her eye. She paused, looked up the beach. It was the playhouse, with its fluttery pink pennant and mock stone turret. She didn't really make a decision to go that way. Rather, she just found herself moving toward it, walking, walking, and suddenly she was standing there, on the sandy beach, in the shade of a giant tree, looking at a little girl's playhouse. But in her mind, she was on another beach, years ago, standing under a different tree, in the glow of distant house lights, with her best friend and the boy she thought she'd love forever. We'll bury it. A pact. Means we'll never say goodbye. How shiny their naivete had been, like polished silver, glinting in the darkness. She had never believed in anything as much as she'd believed in the three of them at that moment. She bent down, peered through the small, plastic-shuttered window to the castle's interior. Several Barbies lay in plastic beds, their clothes scattered around. An open Dr. Seuss book lay beside an empty juice box. Here was where Grace played alone. Lexi let her fingers trail atop the flat, mock stone roof as she moved into the yard.
The grass was lush and green. Summer hadn't sapped its color yet, nor turned it crisp. A worn deck jutted out from the log cabin, clearly a construction afterthought. In one corner was an old picnic table with two benches. Beside it, a plastic-tarped barbecue. Along the split-rail fence line, roses grew wild, their leggy green branches climbing over one another like adolescent boys, offering bright pink flowers to a girl. The house, Zach's house, was a rustic log cabin with a roof that sprouted moss along its seams. Gray stone chimneys bookended the place, seemed to hold it together. She remembered again the party they'd come to here as juniors. That was before alcohol had taken over their class. Back then, only a few of the kids had been drinking. Mia and Lexi had spent most of the night on the beach, just the two of them, listening to music coming from behind them. Zach had been dating Emily Adamson then, and Lexi remembered how sharp her longing for him had been. The sliding glass door rattled open, and there he was.
Lexi.
How many times had she dreamed of seeing him again, of hearing him say her name that way? He stepped out of the cabin and moved closer. She had thought of him so often, pored over his senior picture until every inch of his face was imprinted on her memory. So she saw instantly how much he had changed. He was taller, and his shoulders were broader, even as he'd lost weight. He had on a ripped gray t-shirt that said USC and a pair of khaki shorts that hung low on his narrow hips. His face was sculpted and lean. He wasn't as heart-stoppingly handsome as he'd been before. He had a hard, tired look to him, and his eyes were sad.
"Aren't you going to say anything?" he said.
"I didn't think you'd be here."
"I didn't think you'd be here."
Was there accusation in his voice? She reminded herself that he'd let her down, that their daughter was unhappy living with him. But it couldn't quite grab hold, that emotion. As always, when she saw him, a part of her melted. It was her great weakness. He was her weakness, and had been from the moment she'd first seen him. But she knew better now. He'd let her go to prison, and let her give up custody of their daughter. "I needed to see Grace, needed to know that she was happy." The gravity that had always connected them exerted its force, and before she knew it, she was moving toward him. It wasn't until she was close enough to be held by him that she realized he hadn't moved toward her. He had stayed where he was and let her come to him. Of course.
"Why are you here?"
he said. "I had to see my daughter."
"Our daughter?"
"Yes." Lexi swallowed hard. She'd imagined this reunion 1,000 times, 1,000,000, and never had it been so awkward, so seething with loss and distance. She wanted to ask him about Grace, ask if her daughter was like her at all, but she couldn't do it, couldn't hand him her heart in those few words. It was a mistake she'd made before. He stared down at her. She could feel the heat from his body and the soft exhalations of his every breath.
"She makes a little whistling noise when she sleeps, just like you do. Used to, I mean."
Lexi didn't know how to respond. Of course he knew what was on her mind. He'd always known what she was thinking. She was breathing faster now. So was he, she noticed. She stared at his mouth and remembered how he'd looked when he smiled and how much they used to laugh, and she felt the loss all over again.
"You never answered my letters."
"What would have been the point?" she said to him. "I thought we'd be better off if we just forgot each other, and those first 2 years in prison were hard."
"I used to think about you all the time."
"Used to." She swallowed hard, shrugged. He touched her upper arm in a tentative, careful way, as if he were afraid she would either break or scream. Or maybe he thought she wouldn't want him so close. She stood there, staring up at him, realizing with a start that she wanted him to kiss her. Fool. She stumbled back from him, needing distance between them. She'd been an idiot to get this close. From the moment they'd met, she'd given him her heart. How could she not have learned anything after all that had happened? "You let me go to prison," she said, to remind herself who he really was. "I had no choice." "Believe me, Zack, you've always had choices. I'm the one who didn't." She took a deep breath and looked up at this boy, man, she loved from the first time she saw him, and the pain of their past was overwhelming. "I want Grace," she said evenly. "I filed the papers today."
"I know you hate me," he said, "but don't do that to Grace. She won't understand. I'm all she has."
"No," Lexi said. "That's not true anymore."
She heard a car drive up, tires spin on gravel, and she had no doubt about who had arrived. Jude, sweeping in to save her son and granddaughter from terrible Lexi.
"Goodbye, Zack," Lexi said, turning away.
"Lexi, wait!"
"No, Zack," she said, without looking at him. "I've waited long enough."
Jude was shaking as she strapped Grace into her car seat.
"Ow, Nana!"
"Sorry," Jude mumbled. A headache had spiked behind her eyes and she could hardly see. She texted Miles to get home ASAP and then climbed into the driver's seat. But she couldn't go home. Lexi knew where they lived.
"How come I'm going home early, Nana?"
Grace said from the back seat.
"Was I bad again?"
Home. That was it. She drove too fast to Zack's cabin and parked beside his truck. Once there, she took Grace in her arms and hurried inside, slamming the door shut behind her. The sliding glass door was open. The whole place smelled of the beach at low tide. Zack stood on the deck, looking out at the Sound. Jude carried Grace into her bedroom and put her down on her bed. Handing her a well-worn copy of Green Eggs and Ham, she said, "Read this for just a minute, okay? I have to tell your daddy something, and I'll be right back." Jude left the room and closed the door behind her. Then she went out to the deck and approached her son. She could tell by his stance, his shoulders rounded in defeat, his hands plunged deep in his pockets, what had happened. She hadn't gotten here in time. "Lexi was here," she said bitterly.
"Yes.
She wants another chance, but we don't get one. Mia will always be gone. I can't look at the girl who killed her every day." Zack looked at her.
"Grace is her daughter, Mom."
The simplicity of that made Jude catch her breath. She felt suddenly as if she were hurtling toward a precipice, as if they all were. It scared her to her bones. In the past years, they'd healed just enough to survive. They couldn't go through it again. She'd watched from a distance as her immature, cultish boy had become a man. Grief had shattered him. Fatherhood had put him back together. She flipped open her cell phone and called the friend who had been their lawyer for years.
"Bill, Jude Faraday. The girl who killed Mia is out of prison, and she's filed a petition to get custody of Grace. Tomorrow? Great. See you then."
Jude hung up the phone.
"Grace is unhappy," Zack said, and the heartbreak in his voice was terrible.
"Lexi isn't the answer, Zack. She's the cause. Remember that."
Jude touched his arm. He needed her to be strong now. Maybe he'd needed that for years and not had it, but she would be there for him now. She would protect him. Chapter 23. The next morning, Jude woke up early and dressed carefully.
It's not a funeral, Miles said when he saw her in the kitchen.
Really?
It feels like one. I'll meet you in the car, she said, hurrying away from him. The last thing she wanted to hear right now was his moral superiority, or more endless questions about what they were doing. Of course, the Zen master wanted to explore the idea that bringing Lexi into their lives could heal them. Last night, when they'd gotten home from Zack's, she'd actually told him to shut up for the first time in their marriage. He'd learned his lesson, apparently, because he said nothing as they picked up Grace at kindergarten and dropped her off at the Silly Bear and drove into Seattle. At 1 o'clock, Zack joined them in the lobby of the Smith Tower, and by 1:10, they were seated in a corner office that overlooked Elliott Bay and Pine Island. From this vantage point, the island was a mound of thick green forests floating on a steel-blue sea. It looked uninhabited.
Scott had the petition delivered to my office, Bill said when they'd finished with the pleasantries. Alexa Bale is seeking to modify the parenting plan in which Zack has full custody.
She wants to take Grace away from me?
Zack asked, fidgeting with his cell phone.
She thinks I've been a bad father?
No, actually. She is seeking joint custody, Bill answered.
How can she do that? Jude asked. She gave up custody when Grace was born.
Parenting plans are rarely set in stone, Jude. In this case, Alexa will need to show a substantial change in circumstances, which getting out of prison certainly provides.
So what will happen? Zack asked.
First, we'll have what's called an adequate cause hearing, which establishes only that her circumstances have changed enough to move forward. Next comes the motion for a temporary order. This will establish the custody or visitation rights pending trial. Realistically, it will be at least a year before we actually go to trial. A guardian ad litem will be appointed by the court to determine what the best interests of the child are and to represent Grace's interests.
It sounds expensive, Miles said. How can she afford that?
Probably a legal aid lawyer, or someone might handle the case pro bono, Bill said. At best, she'll get visitation rights, and worst, joint custody. Know this, though. The court will be pushing for reunification with the mother, unless she's clearly unfit or poses a danger to Grace.
You're saying she'll be a part of our lives forever, Jude said.
She already is, Miles answered. She's Grace's.
I wasn't speaking to you, Jude hissed at her husband. To their lawyer, she said, but she is unfit. She abandoned Grace at birth and never even sent her a birthday card. She has no job, no family around here. Her own mother was a felon and a drug addict. Who's to say what friends she made in prison? We wouldn't want Grace exposed to people like that.
Mom, Zack said, straightening. Come on. That's not even fair. Lexi is nothing like her mother. You have to fight her on this, Bill said, giving Zack a steely look. You're a father now, not a high school kid. Your job is to protect Grace. To do that, you need to preserve your rights. If Alexa got custody, even partial, who is to say she wouldn't take off with Grace? And she made a choice, as I understand it. She's never communicated with Grace, not once. That doesn't exactly give me a warm and fuzzy feeling about her parenting. We have to do what's in your daughter's best interest. At least for now, we have to keep her away from Grace.
Absolutely, Jude said.
How is that in Grace's best interests? Zack said. Lexi is her mother.
Bill opened a file.
I'll tell you how it's in her best interest. I've read Alexa's prison record, Zack, and it's not pretty. There are reasons she served an extra 6 months. Fighting. Not following the rules. She was found buying drugs in prison more than once. Valium, I believe, among others. You know who she was,
Zack, but prison changes people. And it looks like your Alexa made some bad choices there. You don't know her anymore. Do you really think Grace is safe around a person like that?
Drugs? Zack said, frowning.
And with her family history. I don't think she's the girl you remember, Zack. She spent a lot of time in solitary confinement. She broke a woman's nose, Bill said. She could actually be dangerous.
Zack sat back in his chair, sighing heavily.
Drugs,
he said again, shaking his head.
We'll fight her, Jude said. We have no choice.
Bill nodded.
Good. I'll file our response and let you know when the adequate cause hearing is scheduled.
I'm hurting them again, Scott, Lexi said, pacing her lawyer's office.
Yeah, Scott said. I imagine they don't want to be reminded of what happened.
What I did.
What you did isn't the sum total of who you are, Lexi. We're not even talking about you here. This is about your daughter. You love her and she needs you. That's what you have to focus on now. That's what you can control. The Faradays' grief is their problem.
She had been ruined again by just seeing Zack. Wanting him made her want to run away again, to hide. How long would she love him?
I saw how much Zack loves her, Lexi said softly.
It's not about him, or them, or what you did. It's about Grace. What does it feel like, Lexi, when a mother turns her back on you?
Lexi stopped pacing and looked at her lawyer. Thank you. That puts it in perspective.
His intercom buzzed. Scott reached forward and picked up his phone. Hey, B. Bill Breen, huh? Okay, thanks.
Hanging up, he opened his desk calendar and wrote something down. Then he looked up at Lexi.
You're going to need to be strong, Lexi.
I'm trying.
Really strong, he said. They're fighting back.
2 days later, Lexi was back in a courtroom. Just stepping through the doorway brought back a flood of painful memories. So much so that when Scott asked Lexi to dress in black, she said no. She would not recreate that day. Instead, the day before the hearing, she went to the thrift store again and purchased a flared, ankle-length sea-green skirt and a barely worn V-neck sweater that was only a shade or two lighter, and a pair of bronze sandals. In her new feminine clothes, Lexi tried to feel unlike the girl in black who'd once been taken out of a room like this in chains. She felt Scott come up beside her. He touched her arm gently.
They're here, he said.
She felt herself straightening. The hair on the back of her neck stood up. She tried not to turn, but how could she stop herself? That gravitational pull toward Zack was too strong. Lexi's heart leaped a little at the sight of him. The suit he was wearing was the same one he'd worn to the homecoming dance. Now it pulled across his chest.
I'm going to kiss you, Lexi.
She looked away from him, tried to forget. She and Scott walked up to the table on the left side of the courtroom. Zack joined his lawyer at the table across the aisle from them. The commissioner was the last to enter. He was a portly man with a shiny bald head and rimless bifocals that rested over a veiny, bulbous nose. His bailiff, an elegant Asian man in uniform, smiled brightly as he took his place near the bench. The commissioner smoothed his robes and sat down.
We're here for adequate cause, he said,
rifling through the paperwork on his desk, finally finding what he needed.
Modification of a parenting plan. Mr. Jacobs?
Scott stood up, whispering for Lexi to do the same.
Ms. Bale is petitioning this court for a modification of the parenting plan. In 2003, Ms. Bale was an ordinary high school senior, in love for the first time, and looking forward to college. Her exemplary grades and academic record earned her a scholarship at the University of Washington. At 18, she had dreams of becoming a lawyer. One bad decision on a summer night changed everything for both my client and the Faradays. Although Zachary Faraday had promised to be the designated driver at a high school drinking party, he failed to keep his word and became inebriated. His twin sister, Mia, also drank all night. And so, tragically, Alexa offered to drive the Faradays home. It was less than a mile away. In the crash, Mia was killed. At the time, I counseled Alexa to plead not guilty and fight for her freedom. But Alexa is a deeply moral young woman with a profound sense of right and wrong. So she pled guilty and went to prison, hoping her incarceration would help atone for her mistake. She didn't know then that she was pregnant. Originally, she planned to give the baby up for adoption, but Zach surprised her by offering to raise their daughter. She was so grateful and so guilt-ridden over Mia's death that she agreed to give Zachary full custody. In prison, Alexa earned a bachelor's degree in sociology, and she hopes now to get a master's degree in social work so that she can help other teenagers who face difficulties in their lives. She is a wonderful young woman, and I have no doubt that she will be an exemplary mother to her daughter. The state has a strong interest in reunification of mothers and their children. In this case, it is absolutely clear that my client has substantially changed her situation and deserves to be reunited with her daughter. Scott touched Lexi's arm, said, "Thank you." And they both sat down. Across the aisle, Bill stood up. In the small courtroom, with its dull walls and scuffed floor, he was an imposing figure, with his expensive gray suit and stern profile. "There can be no adequate cause to modify the parenting plan here. Ms. Bale went to Purdy for DUI vehicular homicide, a Class A felony." He paused, looking meaningfully at Lexi. "Purdy, Your Honor. That's less than an hour's drive from Pine Island. She did not have to be cut off from her daughter's life. She chose not to be a mother. When Zachary Faraday wrote her letters about their daughter, even sent pictures, Ms. Bale sent the envelopes back, unopened. She wrote no letters to her daughter and made no phone calls. In the entire 71 months she was incarcerated, she never once attempted to communicate in any way. A former cellmate of Ms. Bale's, a Cassandra Wojciechowski, will testify that Ms. Bale told her point blank that she never intended to see her daughter. It's hardly surprising, this lack of a mothering instinct in Ms. Bale. Her own mother was a felon and a drug addict. For all we know, Ms. Bale has a drug problem herself. In conclusion, we ask that the custody agreement in place remain in place. Ms. Bale is not a fit parent, and her circumstances are not significantly changed from the time when she voluntarily relinquished custody of her child. Bill nodded once and sat down. The commissioner tapped a pen on the desk. Lexi could hardly breathe for anticipation. Bill's words had loosened a poison in her bloodstream. She could feel it burning through her veins.
"We have adequate cause to move forward here," the commissioner said.
He opened the laptop on his desk, made a few keystrokes as he peered at the screen.
"We'll set a trial date of April 19th, 2011. Does that work for counsel?"
Both attorneys agreed.
"A year?" Lexi whispered. "That can't be..."
"Hush," Scott said sharply. The commissioner went on. "Until then,
Let's move on to the motion for temporary order to begin reunification. I'll appoint a guardian ad litem to investigate the issues and interests herein, and to report the finding to this court.